Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back to Trivia Friday. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. Before we continue, just want to remind our listeners, if you were listening in the last segment, that we will not have Trivia Friday this week.
Instead, it's today, right?
It's today, right. I've never been invited on. That's kind of cool.
Trivia Friday instead is going to be on Wednesday.
Did you catch yourself?
No, what did I say?
Welcome back to Trivia Friday.
Did I say welcome back to Trivia Friday? Yes. All right, okay.
And I'm honored to be on, by the way. I've always wanted to do this.
Steve and I, Brent, over here chuckling, trying not to laugh on that.
I had in my mind to mention there will be no Trivia Friday this week because of Good Friday, and had that in the front of my mind. See, I was just talking to Hannah Leary just before the end of the last segment, and you get to a certain age.
You can't even memorize the AFA schedule. How are you going to memorize scripture?
That is a true statement. So anyway, Friday is Good Friday. We will leave the focus rather than on anything trivial. We will leave the focus on the things of God, as is appropriate. And also, there'll be still our news programs will continue on Friday, I guess. I won't be here. Because
one of
I will
us
be.
Will be. We on holidays we appoint one of our reporters. It's either myself or Chris or Chad, and we split up the
Chad Groening, Chris
Chad
Woodward.
Groening, or Chris Woodward, or myself, and we come in at 5 on that day and just do the day's worth of newscasts, and usually out by noon. If something were to break on that day, we'd come back in. But one of us will be here, and there will be newscasts.
That voice, who's not yet been introduced and thus not yet invited to be on the program, is Steve Jordahl.
Can I come
but
in
he,
now?
He jumped in so he could mock me, along with Walker and Brent over there giving me the mocking look. All right, so, you know, everyone makes mistakes, and that was mine for the week, but my wife would say, we know that's not true. All right, Steve Jordahl, reporter and news anchor for American Family News. Steve, you got news? Go.
I do. Our Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, is traveling. She is in Europe. She's in London currently, and I have a couple clips I'd like to play you. She was talking to the London School of Economics, I believe, to people that are talking about the U.S. system of government and all this kind of stuff that's going on here. And, of course, Ms. Pelosi, she and the president don't get along really well. So I want to play you what she almost let herself be critical of the president and then pulled back, but it's a little disingenuous. Well, I'll let you decide what it is. This is cut three.
I think the president is bankrupt of any ideas. I don't want to talk about the president here because I'm overseas. Mm-hmm. Come see me in Washington, D.C., and I'll tell you what I think about that and the president.
She started that, and it was Christiane on four was talking over her. She said, the president is bankrupt of ideas, but I don't want to talk bad about the president right now.
Because she means that in the nicest way possible.
That's right. Yeah.
When I say bankrupt of ideas, I mean that as a compliment.
That's right.
And then she says, I have to follow the formal rule, which is we don't go overseas and talk bad about our president. But if you want to visit me in my office in San Francisco, I'll tell you what an idiot I think the president is. But I'm not going to say that over here.
That's right.
Oh, brother.
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
She also addressed a little bit of the criticism that Ilhan Omar is catching. Christiane Amanpour brought that up as a question to her. What's going on with anti-Semitism in your party and everything? And this was her answer, speaking of Ilhan Omar, the congresswoman from Minnesota.
Yes, but I don't think that the congresswoman is anti-Semitic. I wouldn't even put those in the same category.
But she's being accused of it.
Well, she's being accused of it, but we have no taint of that in the Democratic Party. And just because they want to accuse somebody of that doesn't mean that we take that bait.
Ilhan Omar, who spoke of 9/11 as some people doing some things, and has been very critical of Israel and frankly, anti-Semitic, that is Nancy Pelosi's take.
Yeah.
Well, if she says it, I believe it.
There you go.
If she says the Democratic Party has no taint of anti-Semitism, even though they could not bring themselves in the House to file a formal resolution condemning her statements, Omar's statements, instead mixed in every other thing they could think of, and then never did decry the anti-Semitic comments themselves. Listen, if Nancy Pelosi says there's not a taint of it, who am I to question her? I believe everything she says.
Talk about being bankrupt of ideas, which goes back to the first clip you played, but still on the Pelosi subject. You know, the Democrats, from a policy standpoint, they're the ones who've been bankrupt of ideas as far as what to do with our country. Up until recently, they've come out with Medicare for All, Green New Deal, which are all horrible ideas. But nonetheless, for about 2 years under Trump, they just bashed Trump. Day after day, bashed Trump and offered no bipartisan solutions to the issues facing our country. So they're the ones struggling with ideas. But what I mentioned earlier today in our show meeting, and that is, and it goes right into Pelosi's second clip about not being able to critique or criticize Omar, Ilhan Omar, the congresswoman from Minnesota, and that is that the left and the Democrats have really pinned themselves in a corner with this whole political correctness, and that is they set up all these rules, all these barriers, all these filters to where this is what's good to say, this is what's not good to say, to where they can't even criticize their own because then they're breaking their own rules as far as not going after a minority, Omar being a Muslim, not going after a Muslim, so on and so forth. So it's really given power to the radicals in the Democrat Party, and that is no criticism can come past them.
Well, and that's an excellent point. No criticism can be levied against those in protected groups in the minds
yes.
of Democrats.
That's right.
So we don't support Islamophobia here, so you can't criticize Ilhan Omar because that's Islamophobic,
yeah.
even though some of the things she said. I think she couched them enough to try to protect herself, Omar, so I wouldn't say they were reprehensible. I think that they were ideas that were as close to being reprehensible as you can get.
Right.
Without defending 9/11, for example.
Sure.
And she didn't exactly do that, which would have been reprehensible. So, listen, I think your point is also well taken, that what the Democrats have done since President Trump was elected is they put all their eggs into one basket. And that was the Mueller investigation and the accusation of collusion with Russia. They assumed, like they assumed that Trump couldn't beat Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. they assumed that Trump would be out. Remember all these things, was Joy Behar on The View just getting so excited when she was brought breaking news, development, you know, in terms of the Russian investigation? They all thought that Trump, you remember seeing all the statements, all the embarrassing statements and they put all their eggs in that basket, and now they're having to come up with ideas on mm-hmm. which they can run.
I think the other thing you just pointed out was a good, we keep asking what's happened to the Democrat Party. How could they have gone so far left? I think your description is exactly mm-hmm. why and how they went so far left.
And the thing is that it's coming back to bite the Democrats and in multiple ways. Not only have they lost control of their party because the radicals, if you will, control the party, but people like Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, like it or not, he's going to fall into this camp. They're on the losing end of this because, they might win the primary. I'm not saying that. But Joe Biden can't go after Kamala Harris because she's a minority.
Right.
He can't go after Omar because she's a minority.
That's not an overstatement.
It's going to be an interesting
very,
primary.
Very
that's why when Joe Biden is being accused of being touchy-feely and then one of the accusations was that he touched a female's thigh under the table at a banquet or something. And, you know, they got all these things going out there and not saying all of them are true. But the accusations are out there. Joe Biden can't defend himself to the fullest extent because then he's going after the, quote, victims, you know, the
yes.
believe her. So the Democrats,
they're all in a bind. That is an excellent point because Joe Biden has to watch because he's a white male. He's an older white male.
Privileged.
He's got white privilege. He can't lecture Kamala Harris on her foreign policy, can't accuse her, because then it looks bad and you run afoul of the left's own rules. That's an excellent point.
I don't know if that's going to happen, but it will be an interesting thing to watch, like on the Democrat debates.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, you remember that Fox News had Bernie Sanders on in a town hall.
Right.
Well, the Democrat Party has put themselves in a little bit of a bind. You may remember that a month or so ago, the DNC itself said that we are not going to participate in any debates on Fox News. We're blackballing them, to which Fox News says, well, you've never had one to this point, so
right.
What's the big deal?
Right.
But Pete Buttigieg now is saying that he wants to have a town hall because of all the numbers that it drew for Bernie Sanders. And The Hill's Joe Concha was talking about this on Fox this morning on Fox and Friends, and this is what he had to say.
Yeah, I spoke to a campaign spokesman for the Buttigieg campaign, and she confirmed to me on the record that they want to reach out. They intend to reach out directly to Trump supporters. They are in talks with Fox News, and now other candidates reportedly may follow as well. And look, why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Bernie Sanders reached 2.6 million people on Monday night. He did a similar town hall on CNN more than a month ago and got 1.2 million viewers less than that. So it only makes sense if you want to win in those states that Donald Trump took in 2016, Michigan, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, Ohio. That's where elections are decided. You go on Fox News if you want to reach those folks.
Well, I don't see any problem with that reasoning.
Yeah, and this is smart on behalf of these Democrat candidates, and they're bucking the party, if you will, by independently going on Fox. And, you know, who knows? The Democrat Party may backtrack on that. They may eventually figure out probably not a bad idea if we do a debate on Fox. I don't know. We'll see. But I think it's good. And yes, there is a concern out there. I mean, it's the writing on the wall. Everybody sees it, that Fox is moving left. That, you know, they bring on Dina Brazil, who lied on multiple occasions about whether she leaked the town hall questions to Hillary Clinton. And I have my own issue with that. But the reality is that Fox is pretty fair-handed. And I think it's a good thing that you bring on these Democrats, Bernie Sanders, and have a town hall, because that's what I just think President Trump and conservatives need to be careful about going after Fox here, because what we've talked about all along has been open and fair and free speech and debate, whether
right.
we like the ideas or not.
Right.
As much as I don't like Bernie's ideas, Senator Sanders, I think he ought to be able to go on Fox and talk about his ideas. So, anyways, I think it's probably smart for Fox to have on these Democrats.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned the president. He did tweet out that he was surprised that Dina Brazil was at Fox, and
right.
that he said that Bret Baier was smiling and all nice and everything, and it kind of shocked the president, he said. Bret Baier wrote back, says, thanks for watching, and if you ever want to have a town hall on Fox, we'd be glad to host you
yeah.
as well.
And I'll just say this, too. I whether it's on the right or the left, I do not watch angry people on it. It's just tiresome. I've been involved in politics since I was in junior high school. I don't want to sit there and watch people angrily yelling. Now, I don't mind passion and voices elevated, but I don't want to watch that anymore. So to have Bret Baier and who is it, Martha McCollum, mm-hmm. to have them smiling. What's wrong with that?
No.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, they're just trying to be
even-handed. And actually, Martha McCollum pushed back pretty heavily on Senator Sanders and some of his ideas, how you would pay for Medicare for all, things like that. So, you know,
She's a good reporter.
Yeah, yep. I thought it went pretty well.
All right, what else you got?
Council Bluffs, Iowa. We have a walkout at Abraham Lincoln High School. About 20 girls say that they are feeling threatened and they do not like the fact that they're allowing boys in the girls' bathroom if the boys decide that they
this
are
is because of their
transitioning
transgender
to become girls. So 20 of these, I guess, brave young women who are bucking the trend walked out with signs in protest of their classes, protesting the fact that they were allowing these transgender kids to use the bathroom.
They were letting boys into the girls' bathroom.
They were, while they were out, they were confronted by about 40 students who were supporting the
policy.
And so there's on both sides. But to me, it's a little, it's kind of encouraging that you have some, at least some high school kids who are willing to stand up and talk against the political correctness of the time.
Now, where was this?
Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Okay. So this is my take. I have no proof of this. This is just my sense of it. You're going to always find 40 who are in support of what everyone, you know, in Hollywood is applauding.
Yeah.
Okay. So 20, when you're talking about these 20 young ladies who are standing against the policy, that takes real courage. And I think it probably represents three or four times that, maybe more, of young ladies who are intimidated into silence, because that is the way the progressive left works. We're going to intimidate you. We're going to shame you. And so kudos to these 20 young ladies, because that is a brave and courageous step to take.
Yeah, and Ed, you usually say that reality is a brutal teacher. Mm-hmm. And I think that's coming true in a lot of these instances where the left-wing agenda is butting heads with reality, meaning privacy for women and for men and everybody is a pretty big deal, especially when you're talking about areas such as a changing room, a bathroom, etc. That's why the Target boycott that we launched did so well, is because this is not a Republican-Democrat thing. That is, we all like our space, you know? And so these women, I think, like Ed's point, many women, I would bet, sympathize and think the same way. Maybe they're not speaking up about it. But I think you're going to see this kind of bucking the left-wing trend going to happen more often.
Well, kudos as well to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. The school district there has put in a policy that says that you have to use the restroom and changing room and locker rooms that are associated with your gender at birth. And and so they are expecting lawsuits, certainly, but they have decided that they are going to not put their kids at risk. And so reason breaking out across the country, it seems odd.
Yes, how odd that people should be reasonable. I'll just throw this one throwaway. It's just crazy that there are schools and school systems and public, you know, political figures, excuse me, who are forcing girls to share the restrooms and changing areas with boys under the pretense that these aren't really boys, they're actually girls. This is insanity, and it comes right out of Romans 1. These people, because they reject the God of Scripture and the God who created us, they believe a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's amazing.
One thing to add to that, I know you got another story you want to get to, but I told my father and I traveled to Minnesota, Minneapolis, twice to meet with Target over the boycott.
Right.
Target boycott. And on the second meeting, I told the Target representatives, I said, and I'm really surprised this hasn't happened yet, I said, you are opening yourselves up for a lawsuit. And here's the lawsuit that I envisioned. That is a biological male, goes into a women's restroom or changing area and sexually assaults one of the customers or whatever. And if you sue Target over their policy, I think there could be a case made that they have basically set their standards up to where it puts women vulnerable to sexual predators because there's no buffer there.
Right.
Historically, it's been, our policy is that biological men go to the men's room and vice versa. That's our policy. That's our safe buffer that protects us from a liability standpoint. But when you take that down and do a free-for-all, then the manager can't say to the man who may be a sexual predator or whatever, sir, you can't go in there. There's no buffer there, so it's a free-for-all.
And that we don't know. That may have happened, and Target may have settled out of court. We don't
right.
We don't know what's happening behind the scenes. And we have pointed out, and we want to, in light of these, because I absolutely agree with Walker, we're not saying that transgendered people would necessarily be the sexual predator. We're talking about sexual predators taking advantage of publicized rules changes to go into a area with potential victims, and then they say, hey, you can't stop me.
And we've had that happen.
And that
we
has
have
happened.
Documented several cases of that.
Right.
So, yes.
All right.
Some good news to end our show. We recently have had the announcement President Trump was rejoicing over doing away with ISIS. ISIS, at least the territory that they held, is no more under ISIS control. They are now spread to the winds, and not that they're dead, but where they plied their trade, specifically in Kobani, Syria, a community of Syrians who converted to Christianity from Islam after seeing the terrible things that Islam did to them, has taken root in this town in Syria. They opened their first evangelical... Oh, hi, Siri.
I knew she was listening to us.
They opened their first evangelical church in Syria, and they have 80 or so people, and these people are saying, we come to Christ because of the happiness and the love that these new Syrian Christians are expressing. It's just phenomenal news.
Well, and this has not been an unusual reaction on the part of Muslims. Now we have pointed this out, that just like in the West, even in America, where you have a lot of, just as a way of saying it, nominal Christians, people who are raised in church, may not necessarily have a relationship with Christ, but they say, yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah, I was born in the South, for example.
Yeah, right.
Or my parents are Christians or what have you. That there are many Muslims who are that same way, who just were born into a Muslim family in a Muslim country, and maybe they practice some, but they're nominally Muslim, especially among many of those when they see Christianity for the first time, and then they see members of ISIS who are performing all sorts of atrocities in the name of Islam and
right.
saying this is the true Islam. And they can listen, they can defend from the Quran. They can defend that position. Mm-hmm. You have the eyes of many of people opening their hearts to the possibility that maybe Islam is not what I thought it was. And then you have Christians who have come in and helped the refugees.
Right.
Wow. What a demonstration of the power of the gospel.
Yeah, and this is bold on behalf of these Christians in Syria, because the threat at their lives is not over yet.
Right.
Because there's still remnants of ISIS and Islamic jihadism, because it's an ideology. You can't 100% defeat it.
Right.
Just like other sins and ideologies. So they're going to be under threat, but that's very bold for them to be public about this church.
Under Sharia law, I believe it is a capital offense to convert from Islam to a different.
That's right.
So this territory in Syria has roots. The Christian roots that go way back, I think, almost to the time of the apostles themselves.
Oh, all that area, yeah,
You know, who traveled and spread the gospel after the resurrection of Christ, and so it's good to see the historicity of this kind of the echo of history, that we're going back and reestablishing the roots that go so far back, and it's tragic that ISIS demolished so many architectural and sites that spoke of that. But God's will is not going to be thwarted. The gates of hell will not stand against
gospel. Well, and some of the most Christian regions in the world have been under Muslim control since the 600s A.D. So all of North Africa was some of the most Christian, Egypt, the Middle East, obviously, but all over to Iraq, and then what is now Turkey.
Thomas end up in India?
Yes, that is the tradition of the church, is that Thomas went to India. So all these areas were conquered by Muslim armies and subjugated under Islam, but these were traditionally all very Christian areas, centers of learning, Antioch, Syria area, but... Augustine of Hippo in North Africa. So anyway, here at Holy Week, we see the power of the gospel working to change lives, even in an area once controlled by ISIS. All right, folks. No, this was not Trivia Friday. Like I said earlier, this has been Today's Issues. More great programming directly ahead on the American Family Radio Network. Bye for now.